I just want to know what she's eating right out of the air fryer, is what I want to know.
Is that what she was doing?
Think the
Right
pot.
out of the air fryer?
This is an intervention.
Don't be ridiculous. It was a pot.
Welcome to Talk Like a Mother Parenting Autism Podcast. We are Jen, Kim, Rachel, and Jamie. Take a seat at our table as we share with hope, humor, and honesty.
Hello, listeners. We are ready to start a new series. This one is called Waving the White Flag. And this is another series, like a take two on breaking the stigma around mental health. Our third series, actually, one of our most popular, was around mental health. And this one is going to take kind of a different focus and a different look at it, but it may be a little triggering. So this will be a 5-week series as usual. And in it, it might be a little heavy, a little tough, but we hope to help to validate your experience through sharing our own and also try and give you some tools to try or ways to find help and resources. This week is episode one, and we are going to talk about what's getting us down. And, you know, in our last series, we talked a lot about self-love, and in that we sort of like discussed some of our hangups around self-love ideas. In this, like, we talked so much about how mental health played into that for each of us. And for this week, I kind of wanted to touch on not only how is our mental health right now, but like what is getting us down, because we parent under this super pressure of special needs. And it is so much to balance all the things to keep ourselves healthy and well. I don't know. It's just a lot. It's a lot. Does anyone want to give an update on the last couple of years, or the last few years since we've talked about this so specifically?
I can't even tell you where my mental health was 3 years ago, 2 years ago, a year ago, 3 months ago.
You know, in the last series, or in that series, Kim, I can kind of remind you, you talked a lot about how you had to look at how your anxieties were not like typical, I'm scared in a parking lot, but rather that it was like big and significant, and it like adjusted your ability to have quality of life. And then you talked a little bit about how this is one of my favorite things you said, the only fix for your anxiety is your depression, and the only fix for your depression is your anxiety. I don't know. I know you, so I know that a lot of those things are still at play, but do you have an update?
Yeah, like I think for me, the anxiety thing has just been ongoing since I've been 16. I don't anticipate it probably ever changing. I definitely have, it ebbs and flows, you know, sometimes it can get a lot worse. I can obviously get triggered by something environmental going on, you know, something going on with one of the kids or, you know, whatever it could be. There's definitely things that trigger the anxiety and make it kind of like more acute. I mean, if you think of it like someone who has like intermittent asthma, where like they could be like okay for a while, but then they go out to play basketball and boom, it's flared up, or they get a cold and it's flared up. And it's like very similar to that, where just it can get triggered at any point. And then I can have times like where it just kind of comes out of nowhere and I don't know why it's there, but it's just something that just ebbs and flows, and it continuously has done this since I've had it. I've definitely learned to manage it over the years. I've really been able to like analyze and kind of like pinpoint a lot of my triggers. And that helps. It helps to kind of know what the triggers are, because then I'm better at like pushing it down. I don't know if that's just the healthiest way to go with it, but you know what? It works. I've learned to push it down. Kind of like I can stop myself with certain things, you know, because sometimes you cause your own anxiety. Like if you're thinking, what if this and what if that or whatever it is, it's like once I start thinking that, I'm like, okay, stop that right now. Don't even say what if, because that's just an anxiety producing like statement, period.
Yeah.
And I've learned things like little tricks like that, that kind of take me out of it, but it always ebbs and flows. And when it decides to come back full force, there ain't shit I can do about it. So
I've heard you both in depression. One of my favorite things or ways you describe depression, which I identify a lot with, is that you stop feeling. And so when you feel that, like working up, I can think of a like pinpoint a time in the winter where it's just like the weight of everything, you kind of feel like released from it, but you have like a slowing of your whole systems, you know?
Yeah. And I think for me, it's like walking a tightrope. I mean, I definitely most likely have seasonal depression. I'm not diagnosed with it, but I'm pretty sure that I do. The time change affects me greatly. I'm realizing like over time, it's like the same pattern of the same times a year that it tends to happen. And it's literally like walking a tightrope, because I know if I fall off this very, very delicate balance that I'm walking, once I fall Yeah.
How long will I
I
be
might not
down?
get out. I don't know if I can get out. So I do everything in my power to like try to keep it at bay. And sometimes it works. Sometimes I kind of maybe fall, but like fall to a sitting position. Don't quite get off it. I might be like hanging like this,
Yes,
you know?
That's right. Yes. Yes.
I'm definitely
You got a
afraid
knee
of
down.
falling into that depression because two times I have fallen into it deeply and it's just terrifying. Like anxiety sucks and it's awful, but like I feel like I can muscle through anxiety more than I can a depression. A depression just stops you in your tracks and I feel like I'm powerless to do anything once it gets to that
Depression
level.
also just feels to me like a slide, whereas anxiety, even when it's bad, there's still like ebbs and flows within the fits of it throughout the day or the hour or the minute, whereas depression just feels like it's getting worse.
I think anxiety also could be channeled into positive ways, as crazy as that sounds. I mean, unless it's manic behavior, I don't know. But it's like, that's the part of you that sometimes can be like, get very chatty and get almost like hyper over it. So it can be channeled sometimes in a positive, productive way, where like depression, not always, but like sometimes you can do that. But depression, you can't. Like
No, there's no
depression
way
is
to hide.
such a weight, and it's soul crushing, and there's no rhyme or reason for it, because sometimes things could be good. And like if you're depressed and things are good, it's like the weirdest feeling in the world, because it's like you're in your mind, you're like, what literally is my problem? Like what? Because everyone's like, what are you depressed about? But it's just like, no, you're not. It's your brain chemistry. Like it's not like you're depressed about a single thing, but definitely the time change, the darkness, the winter, it really does affect me a lot. So, and then things that are going on, like when she's having a hard time, that just affects my mental health, because it is sometimes depressing. And it's not the same thing as being in a depression. Obviously, they're two very different things, but it's still a struggle in your mind, you know?
Yeah.
Go for a tan, Kimmy.
Go for a tan.
Seasonal affective disorder. Get some UV light.
Well, the cruise did help. I mean, obviously it's gonna, but like the sunlight.
Yeah. Cheap solution.
Yeah. Cheap solution.
Yeah. Yeah. Jen, how is your mental health over the past few years? And what do you find it is that's getting you down?
I mean, I think like everyone, you know, I'll get in a funk, but I'm just a joy, ray of sunshine all the time.
Basically a ray of sunshine.
I mean,
warm,
I don't
warm
know
sunshine.
What else to say. I talked about it before. I do have clinically diagnosed OCD. That's not changed. Actually, I was just laughing to myself. I've seen that same nail. My nail lady,
manicures.
Kaya's 13. Kaya was 4 when I started seeing her. So I've been seeing her a long time. And I compulsively shower. That's where my OCD manifests, and cleaning of my house and showering. And my heels are so bad right now that she said, stop, you need to stop showering. They were so bad, so painful, but she has to do her thing.
Do her job. Yeah.
It gets the skin off. But I don't know. For me, when I get in that place, I shut down. I have to force myself to get on our calls, because I know that if I don't start talking, then I'll just sink deeper into it. You know, other than that, you know, that stuff. I mean, autism is a heavy weight, but I'll actually say to myself, I have a pretty good life. I mean, I'm very fortunate. I, you know, stop it, that kind of thing. Try to do that.
Yeah. I identify with you in thinking like, when our girls have a struggle, and for you right now, you guys have been in like a period where things are going pretty well. I'm not going to say it out loud or like much louder than that, but like things go pretty well and then it falls apart a bit, you know? And yeah. I think that watching you go through the last year, like you get rocked so much when Kaya has a struggle, when it comes like out of left field, but you're able to like stand up faster, to like recover your prioritizing your sleep, which I think is so different than a few years ago.
I was just going to say,
it just makes everything more possible.
When you read an ad, it's like, make sure you get sleep and drink water. And it's like, well, we don't really have that luxury of getting that sleep. But what I do now is I do sleep when she's sleeping and I do go to bed. But I will say, with eating differently and not drinking, which I wasn't a heavy drinker by any means before, but I liked my wine and my Crown. That keeps me up. I don't get a good sleep. Drinking water, eating clean, and, you know, the occasional exercise, I do feel better. I do feel better. And so there is something to that with the mindset.
And like your mindset is more capable. Like 3 years ago, you were like how am I going to figure out these macros? I mean, everything was surrounded by doubt. And now it's like you're in stride. Yeah. I mean, not just because you're on the treadmill and you're killing it and not falling off, but like because you're in a stride, you know?
She got a really sad update from the treadmill, but that's another discussion.
Oh, shoot.
That lack of sleep really does affect your mental health.
Like, it does.
Oh, especially if there's already things that are going on that like are making you feel down. If you're exhausted on top of it, it's like, because the exhaustion is just like pulling you down on its own. And then, you know, kind of those like negative feelings, like she's having a really hard time right now. So then of course it's like to the point where sometimes I like, this sounds stupid, but like I forget that I have a kid with a disability because she's happy and she's pretty good most of the time, you know, until she's not, or until there's an issue. But usually it's, we get through it. And it might be like a 15 to 20 minute thing where you're like, but then it's, you know, then you just, you snap right back. But she's having a really hard time. And then like that definitely affects me because then it makes me remember, you know, it makes me, because it's like a million things. Like you saw some of it last night, but she's just getting set off so easily. And we don't really know why. She's just getting triggered. She's not sleeping right. She's just not like, she's just off. And we don't really know why, but her reactions to everything are so extreme. And I have two people in the house that also are very active to her. And it's like, I think
activating, that, like,
no, like activating. They react to her actions. It's like, so they're being reactive. So they're all having a effing meltdown. It feels like in one way or another. And each thing just escalates her more because it's like, you can't yell at her when she's already like distressed. And don't get me wrong. I do yell at her sometimes too. Like sometimes you just lose your patience, but she like is throwing, she threw a game like straight across the kitchen. She's throwing mail off the table. Then my dog.
Oh my God. And it's like a car crash. Everything goes in slow motion, even though it's also life and fast forward. And so you're like, no, like you can hear that box crash for like a week and a half.
And then Lexi comes and she goes, oh, I can throw stuff too. And she starts throwing stuff off the table. And I'm like, is this real life? And then she's screaming because other things are being thrown. And it's just like this whole cycle of, you know.
Yeah.
When I'm the most sane person.
How are you supposed to keep it together when these are the environment?
Like we did used to do this a long time ago. We haven't done this in a very long time. Like usually I kind of like, if he's dealing with it, I'll let him deal with it. If I'm dealing with it, I deal with it. It's just very, the whole thing is just very triggering for everybody. And she literally woke up today in the same meltdown. Like she woke up, started screaming, came out here, was stomping around. Like we weren't here. She's screaming, mine, mine, mine. Like I don't even know if she realized she went to sleep. And it could be anything. I said a word, like had nothing to do with her. It was a conversation. And she reacted off that word. I always think of like, is there something going on? Is there something wrong? Is she hurt? Is she sick? We don't know what's happening with her.
In here, regards to like what gets you down, compounding mental health issues, like Celie has hers, Billy has his anxiety, I have significant depression, like stacking it all up and all coping at the same time means there's not a lot of coping going on sometimes.
Well, like Lexi has ADHD, so the noises bother her. So the yells and the scream trigger Lexi. So then she reacts, but it's like, then Alyssa's reacting to her tone of voice. Like it's just a whole snowball effect. It just brings you down. Because it's like, you feel bad, but also selfishly, it's like, I feel like I don't get a minute of peace. Now it's like she's trying to have, the more things you pick and choose, the more control she seems to be like needing. It's just very frustrating, you know?
Yeah. Later we'll talk about how like we prioritize our needs against the needs of our households. And it's terrible. I mean, it's just hard to balance. Jame, how are you doing with your mental health and what gets you down lately?
I mean, I can really relate to like Kimmy talking about the anxiety thing. That's probably my biggest issue, which I think leads to depression for me. I don't think for myself, I think they are very connected because I get so anxious and worked up about things that I go to the worst thing. And then I know I'm in a really bad place when I can't rationalize it. I can't think my way out of it. So, you know, there's some days where I feel crappy about things and I can think, okay, in reality, my life is all right. Like I'm doing okay. I have a safe place to live. My kids are doing okay. Things could be worse, which is like not always the best go-to, but I do think about that. And sometimes that does come with like comparing to other people's lives and being like, okay, greater struggles than me. So sometimes I could do that. When I can't do that, which is where I fall a lot, probably within like the last 2 years, which is a place I've hit many times, but I hit this place pretty frequently now and for longer periods of time where I
cannot
my brain just as when I try to get there, I'm like, okay, it could be worse. And it's like, no, this is horrible. Like, I literally can't dig out. And I know deep down rationally, it's not the end of the world. Things could be a million times worse. But just in that forefront of my brain, I'm like, I can't dig my way out of this. And I just get super down. And for me, it's often triggered by big things happening in life, which I think for a lot of people, to start, but then it's like these little things that build off of those, I go back to that. So it's like an immediate reaction.
You've talked about Amelie's blood disorder on the podcast. So like, just to give an example of that, you can like think of, okay, Amelie has this blood disorder and it's going to affect her in these ways that I've learned or could, but then, and like, you can process and grieve that or like protect that or whatever, nurture her through that and yourself through that and give grace. But that doesn't mean that you're not feeling the pain of the fact that she can't go to this playground because it has wood chips and she's going to fall. Or I made that up. I'm not sure if that's regulating or, you know, a thing for her, but like that it's 55 things in the daily life, not just the weight of the diagnosis, right? Any of those things can bring you back. Sorry.
Well, I get to a place. That's the example. I feel like I probably talk about that too much, but that's really the big thing on my brain last year. So it's like, you know, she got this diagnosis. It was so heavy and hard at first. And then like, we're talking to doctors, we're being educated. There's ways to handle this. It's really not an issue unless it's an issue. But then it's like, she has a bloody nose that won't stop like every day for the week. Meaning then we have to like, go to these certain medications. And if that medication doesn't help, then we have to go and she has to get a transfusion. Like, it gets pretty like crazy pretty quickly.
But
day to day, it's usually not, you know, it's like, you know, and again, it could have been something worse. It, she could have a higher level of this thing than what she has. And so it's like, you know, recently we went to the dentist, my kids both need dental work. It's just going to happen. I've always had horrible teeth. I'm very prone to cavities. My kids are too. And it's like now to get her this dental work done, we have to go in first to get this medication transfused into her blood because they have to build up her platelet count, her clotting and stuff before, just in case anything goes wrong at the dental appointment. You know, like they're doing these things.
Yeah.
Technically no
and that's like the last that's the last thing you need to hear. It's like
exactly. Yeah. I already have to like deal. I hate the dentist, which is like my thing. Like we already have to go do that. My poor daughter has to sit through that. Mm-hmm. And now before that, we have to go across town, get this done. They have to observe her, make sure she's okay. Then we go to the dentist, get that work done. We have to go the next day. We have to do all her dental work within 24 hours so that the transfusion is still in her blood, blah blah. Is it so to me, it's just like, I cannot wrap my brain around it while it's happening. I'm trying to call the hemophilia people. I'm talking to the dentist. My husband is helping me out because I'm literally like losing my mind. And I am like, in the end, it's all just precautionary. And I'm like, this is just precautionary. And it gets me into like such this dark place where I'm like, I'm just doing what's right for my kid. I go to like this why me, why her, why us kind of thing. And then I start worrying about like her and 15 years. And like, it's just like crazy where my brain goes and I cannot pull myself out. And
well, it just gets really overwhelmed, I think.
Yes. And then, it's not just that. It's like a lot of things recently. And I think it's just because I am so on edge that I'm finding myself in that place a lot. Like right now I'm doing like this week has been like an okay week. I'm doing,
you know why, James? You're accomplishing the traitors this week.
Yes, because Rachel's had me disassociate from the world and I'm just
doing
traitors, although same I'm getting to the point where it's making me a little crazy.
We're going to need something else.
I'm going soon. A little, I don't trust any of you right now. I'm just kidding.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, you're fine. But like, it's just a lot. I'm in and out of that a lot. Like this last summer was really rough on me. I talked about that before, how like, going on that trip and having that bit distracted pull me out. And I do come up and out of it. It's just like one thing can happen and have like this huge effect. And so that's where I'm at right now. It's not the greatest place to be at, but I'm not like stuck. I'm not completely stuck in it.
You have Jesse's struggles, which are totally different, you know, totally different type.
Yeah.
And then like her stuff's like the medical stuff. So it's like, it's just like you're being pulled in two different directions constantly. Never mind. Like just
hers, it's like could be life threatening. So it's like,
yeah,
you know, all that pressure.
And And not that, like, obviously you do what you got to do, but then there's the financial strain of it, which is also, yes, like, hard. Like, of course you're going to get her the medicine she needs regardless, but, like,
tell them how much that medicine is, Jamie. Just tell the listeners how much that medicine is. Like, if so, you had no coverage and you have to pay for it.
If I had no coverage, so one of her meds, which is one we can administer, it's just an oral medication. We went to just our regular pharmacy to, like, do it, and the pharmacist comes out to my husband who went to pick it up. He's like, so you need to talk to your doctor because this medication is, what was it? Was it $2,500 or something?
Something like, yeah.
It was insane. Like, and they had to do, like, a further pre-authorization and all this stuff, mm-hmm, like the insurance and the doctor book. So we ended up getting that down. We had to work through, like, a specialty pharmacy who really helped us. We got that down to, like, I think it ended up being like $50 or something, but, like, she, it's an as needed medication. So it's not all the time. So, but if she has a lot of bloody noses or something, she has it. The transfusion medicine, I can't even remember. I mean, it's several grand what it would be.
Yeah.
It's just, and I, and so the way we're getting help with that one, which if our insurance just covered it as is, I think we would have to pay $250, just like the copay or whatever that is you pay. But they, the people who make that medication have a program that helps you out. And so we've gotten that down a little bit more, even more, which is nice. But man, my heart goes out to people. I mean, I know this is totally off subject, I'm sorry, but, like, I've just learned so much. Like, we're, you know, how I always say, like, we kind of have, like, we're partially in the autism world. Like, my son is, I would say, middle of the ground autism. He's not high impact, but he's not high, what they would call high functioning. He's really in the middle, but, like, you know, I see all sides of it. And the same thing with this, like, we're not purely, there's people who are constantly fighting for wheelchairs, constantly fighting for medications. And, like, we are in a place where it's, like, as needed. It's messed up. Like, it is, the stuff is so expensive. And the hoops, yeah, you have to jump through to get the help, to get the life-saving medications you need for your kid is insane. Like, I've always heard it was bad, but I didn't, obviously it doesn't really hit you until you're, like,
in it.
Yeah. It's, mm-hmm. But anyway, that's,
but that's what I mean, the additional pressure, that financial strain already with the pressure of the blood disease or disorder.
It's called a blood disease, but
yeah. And, you know, it's a lot on top of the autism and.
And more paperwork, people, just so you know.
Oh my God, all this effing paperwork.
Rachel Flanagan, birthday girl. Today is her birthday. We're airing her birthday, but we're recording on her birthday.
That's true. I so my mental health is not that dope, but I will say today's my birthday and I made it to 41, which you'll hear in a moment, or if you're a longtime listener, you know that that's actually quite an accomplishment. I have not been doing super well. It's been like a touch and go couple of years for me. Things have been like a little critical, and some days I'm doing okay. Some days I'm just making it. For me, I deal with clinical depression with PTSD, and I struggle mostly with suicidal ideation. So that's been a consistent thing. I talked about that in our last episodes all those years ago. But for me, suicidal ideation isn't like, man, I'd be better off gone. It's more like a record that plays on a loop in fast forward. And if it isn't taking over, it's because I'm actively battling it. And it can be a moment in the day because something went awry, like just something where I feel like I fell short and that just can kick right in. Or it can be that it's not necessarily at the forefront of my mind. I'm still bargaining. I'm still convincing myself that, like, gosh, you wouldn't want to pass away in your daughter's birthday month. Like, stick it out. Like, next month is Billy's birthday month. I don't want to die in Billy's birthday month, so I'll get through. But it's like constantly bargaining with myself and that will to get well, you know? I'm sorry. It's been so hard for me under the weight of this depression to even function. But I say that and I'm still like a high functioning bomb ass mom for Sealy. So like I could both be drowning and also holding her up. And I think that being able to function through her being her mom, even though I was like, my laundry is piling up, my dishes have been in the sink to the point that it's stressing me out too. Like all of my stuff can be sort of failing and she's still making it to school and I'm still doing the paperwork or I'm still meeting with the people. And so I had myself convinced that it wasn't that bad because I was still helping her or still succeeding. Anyway, most recently, all of that kind of came to a head. So as our listeners know, my husband and I separated in July. And then in October, November, things got really difficult with Celie. In November, I ended up being hospitalized because I was pretty dangerous. I was in danger, I guess. I don't know if I was dangerous. I was in significant danger. Like, things were really critical. And so I went to the hospital and got a lot of help. And in that time coming out and the outpatient program that I attended, I found my way back to myself a little bit. I learned how depression was affecting me and in so many ways. And I was able to see that a lot of what was going on in the relationship with Billy and I had been affected so much by my own mental health and my ability to feel worthy of being loved and being lovable, and like not realizing that my thought of my own failure wasn't the reality. You know, like, I just thought I was such a mess, and really I still have worth even in that.
And you got some solid sleep for the first time.
Yeah. So, I mean, the stuff that gets me down is that I have clinical depression and PTSD. The stuff that keeps me down is that I can't help my daughter fast enough. The stuff that compounds it is that I can't meet my basic needs when I'm having a 42-hour day. When you are depleted to the point that our life often gets us to, I mean, it's like not sustainable. How many times have we said that? You know, it's like, I'm going to die under the weight of this thing, though. Like, it's really hard. Anyway, so I've learned in understanding that depression is why I can't do the dishes. Depression is why I use the DoorDash more than cooking. Like, depression is me meeting my basic needs by any means necessary with the least amount of doing because I can't. Sort of learning that that's depression and not like laziness or me getting up, it's given me a way through. It turns out the flip side of all of those failures is that you need to eat, you need to sleep, you need to rest, you need to have water, you need, like, you need to meet your basic needs, or you're just fueling a fight on an empty tank, you know?
Those darkest thoughts come for me, or like the hardest things, or the thing, the anxiety for me hits the most when I'm so tired. And it's usually in the middle of the night, because I'm up in the middle of the night, because we've all gotten that place where like you're so overtired that you can't sleep when you have the opportunity to sleep. And it just literally eats you alive. And I think that's with all those things you're talking about. It's like, you need those basic things, because when you have those big leaps of mental health, catastrophizing, it goes there immediately. Because it's like, oh, I'm hungry and I'm grumpy. It's like, I'm hungry and I hate my life. You know, like, it seems so extreme, but it's where our...
Oh, no, seriously, like, Celie can fall on roller skates. I mean, that has nothing to do with me. That is a kid with balance issues falling on roller skates. And I'm like, well, you know what? She probably won't fall on roller skates when I'm gone. You know, it's like, probably her dad's going to have a softer floor. What is that bullshit? I mean, like, you can just make up some shit because it's along your rhetoric of like, I'm going to die here. You know, one of the things that I have thought a lot about and sort of had to try and help the people that I was at this outpatient program to understand is that I am not parenting in a typical way. I am parenting under the pressure of like the life and deathness of every time my daughter elopes. She just recently, the front window was broken in my house. Like, I can't go to the bathroom with broken glass in my house and leave her around. Like, everything is a big deal. And I was discussing how in our life, you know, you obviously think about the isolation. Like, as a podcast, we talk about the link between us as being autism. And, you know, our friendship has changed so much because the isolation has changed since we've become friends. But I just want to read a little bit about what I found on the internet today when I searched how to know if you have a bad mood or you're depressed, and when to know when to get help, and like, what is depression sort of all together. These are the things that I wrote down. Just listen to these words. Let me hear what you think. Sadness, isolation, lack of like personal hygiene is failing, mood swings, irritability, sleep changes, hopeless, helpless, being a burden, feeling empty or slow. I am like, Jesus Christ. This is like the ballad for being a special needs mom. So when you think about like the life that we're living, it's not just a mental health or a mental illness. It's like the environment we're in compounds this reaction. Do you know what I'm saying? The isolation is there. It's not depression. It's this life. The sadness is there for many people. It's not situational. It's forever. That feeling of being a burden. I can't identify with not being irritable or not being sad, but you know, I'm in a thing. Like, I'm like, wait, that's not the baseline for people. Some chastness, irritability. Anyway, with that, I feel like that is parenting under pressure. How do you balance parenting under pressure and your own needs, Jean?
Oh, it's so hard. We just had a moment this last week where I took Jesse to an event. It was a disaster. And it was just a reminder, kind of really very related to our mental health. Like you're talking about, you know, when we're at home, things happen at home. And there's definitely moments where I'm like, oh my gosh, how are we going to get through this? But I forget when we're in public. It's every time we're in public with autism, we have issues. It's my son wants to be there. He can't handle being there. Anyway, this night was a disaster. And I get home. I'm teary on the way home. My son gets home and he runs off and does whatever. He's recovered and fine. But I'm trying to talk to my husband about it. And my daughter is nearby. And I just start bawling because I can't hold it in anymore. And just, you know, when you start talking about it. And then I feel so guilty that my daughter's seeing me crumble, basically under the pressure. Because, you know, you see all these things about how you should be that rock for your kids and that consistency. And, you know, like, you got to be the example of like how to handle things. And I do want to say, I do think it's good for our kids to know that things do get to us and things are hard.
Yeah.
But I really do try for her not to, especially at this age, to see like how much it affects me. And, you know, just like me, like blurting everything out to my husband. So like, for me, a big part of it is trying to not do that. You know, when I am having those hard moments, I can say to my kids, I'm having this hard moment. Mm-hmm. And parent in that way, but also like giving myself space away from things. Like you guys know, like I either go for a walk every night or I go have a bath by myself because I need to come down for things. That doesn't mean I'm necessarily always bawling in those things or crying, although I am a crier and sometimes that does happen, but I need to regulate myself as much as I can, no matter where my mental health is at. And so when I'm in front of my kids, I can still be productive as a parent without it letting take over. And I think this isn't healthy either, but I think my mental health a lot, the reason I do keep going is because I have to keep going for my kids. Like I have never gotten to like the really hard points that Rach has gotten to, but I just want to give up some days and just like crawl into bed and hide away. But I'm like, no, I got to keep moving. My kids need this and this done. Sometimes I'm frustrated that I can't just do that, but I know that does help me. I just have to keep moving forward and helping my kids when I can, because if I fall there too, then that's only going to add to the...
It's like a sucker punch sometimes, you know, the unfairness of it. And that's what it is, you know? And then it all seems to like emotionally fall on us. I don't know if like dads are just hold it in easier. And I really think they have just a... Like Neil is a totally different perspective. And I feel like so does Isaac, like totally different perspective than we do about things. It just feels so much weight on us sometimes, I think.
Well, and I think as a parent in general, I mean, you always hear like, you really don't know how hard your mom had it until you are a mom or a parent. And I think a lot of that people think is manifested in ways of, oh, you have to give up pretty much every day of your life. You're not going out anymore. Your body's gonna like go to the dogs. You're screwed. You don't realize when the people are saying that, they're talking about the mental load you take on for yourself and your children. And man, it's hard not to crack carrying your mental health and carrying your kids' mental health.
And that's what just typical children. Do you know what I mean? Like you throw a disability on top of all that. It's like,
I feel like moms are juggling plates and we're juggling like flames of fire plates. Like we're oh, it's whatever. Watch this.
So I'm just saying, you don't always have the luxury of being able to put yourself first or take that space away, because sometimes there's not another person there to tag out. And if your kid's doing something that can hurt themselves, which some of our children at times do, I have, but I come right back.
Yeah, those elements of it, like you throw in self-harm, you throw in like meltdowns, all these different things. There's definitely many moments where you cannot take this step.
Self-harm will send me into a spiraling funk like nothing else.
When oh my God.
Self-harm, it days. Literally, I plummet. Yep. For me, yep. I can't really show a lot of like sadness or if I'm crying in front of Kaya, I have to say, oh, mama has allergies because she gets so upset. What Jamie was saying about you, you have to keep going because you have kids. And that's exactly what it is. I can't show that sadness. Like I can't do that in front of her. She'll get very sad, get very worried about me. And then it feels like it puts it on her, you know, I feel like it kind of goes onto her. So even if we're in the car and I'm silently crying over something that's happened, you know, I say, oh, mama has allergies. No, it's okay. Just have allergies because she gets upset, you know?
Yeah. You guys are so interconnected.
Because then you're having to then you become her trigger. Then you have to deal with her having behaviors around you when you really you're having a big thing. Like you're going through a thing. It's hard. Those flaming plates is all I can picture.
Yeah. Well, we had a thing last night, barrels out of her room. After this is like the 50th like thing that happened. Full fledged down on her knees, like from just, and I go, like, I don't even know what triggered it. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, what did you just do? And she goes, I fall. I'm like, you just lied to me. I don't know if I should be proud right now. You like, A, had the language, and B, were like, oh shit, mom's mad. I'm going to say I fell.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just so, oh, it's so hard not to react to that. And then like with her, for instance, like you have to comfort her after all. Doesn't matter what happens, doesn't matter what she does, at the end you have to comfort her because it's the only way. You'll never get a de-escalator if you don't. So, and it's really hard. I find that really hard to do sometimes when you're frustrated, you're upset, shit's hitting the fan, literally hitting the fan because things are being thrown, like it's just and then the next thing you know, she's just like, no, it's like she's
oh my God.
Back, like nothing
and you're
happened.
Still pissed. Yeah, you still can't.
Yeah, like you're if you but your insides like it just I'm just shaking.
I feel like I've got an 18 to 48 hour situation after Celie's behaviors, and she has like a 14 second turnaround. She's like,
yeah,
go, let's roll. I've got another problem next.
I think that's such a big thing with your original question, Rach, of like, how do you parent and deal with your own mental health? And man, oh man, it really is just like shoving it down because you have to take care of their needs first in so many moments. And sometimes you crack and you don't do that, but oh, Kimmy, that just made me think of that. Like just in general, it's like, you gotta,
well, then
you gotta,
like
hug them Kim's- and you gotta make them feel better. And of course that's what we want to do as moms, but man, it's hard in that moment where you're like, you literally just hurt me. I would love to just go cry in my bathroom right now, but I gotta set you up. I gotta make sure you're okay, you know?
Well, and to hell with Kim's basic needs. Now you're up until 4 o'clock hugging a kid that's been having a fit since two. You have to go to work. Like it's your shit is gonna take place later. I mean, it's just the hardest part.
Well, and the way she is, her routine also can't be disrupted. So if this were happening to like prior to dinner or mid-meal, like she would then, after all this, and I'm talking about extreme, she's screaming, self-harming, like out of control, then just, go right back to her meal and finish it. Cause like she can't take a break in the routine. So she has to go and finish what she started. And I'm like, are you shitting me right now?
I know.
My insides are shaking. I'm like so tense, like my anxiety, my heart is like beating so fast. And I'm like, just like, and she's just like, la, 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 like, you know, and then of course I have to be like smiling and engaging with her, like, even though like I'm raging inside my brain, just with the whole trauma of the whole event, like not even being mad at her, just being, it's triggered. Sometimes it's very triggering. And it can just, for me, especially with her being so old, like, I don't like to throw this word around, but it's almost like PTSD. Because it's like, we've been through everything you can think of and then got through it. And then it's like the rug is pulled right from underneath you and you're right back there. And it's just, my needs go at the bottom of everybody else's because I have to not only manage her shit, I got then my husband losing his shit, my daughter losing her shit. And I'm like, I also want to lose my shit, people, but I can't because I have to like manage all of you people. It really sucks sometimes. And that's why I stay up until 2 a.m. every night, people, because that's the only time I can like decompress and then I suffer for it.
For people who listen who aren't special needs parents, then the expectation that therapists and all these experts give us after that, all that happens, we're supposed to sit down and analyze why it happened how
eat
it was
my
handled.
Shorts.
And then whether or not you do that, you feel guilty because you're either mm-hmm. you're not doing that or you are overanalyzing your head. You're like, okay, why does this keep happening in this situation? Mm-hmm. Or then it becomes like this whole other thing when you're just trying to like parent on top of that. And I feel like any parent can probably relate to that. Like when your child has a tantrum and you're like trying to figure out why, you're like, is it my parenting? Is it this? It's just so much to carry as a mom.
Well, and the expectations are so unrealistic from the professionals. Like, your kid has a seizure, they'll be like, oh, try to videotape it. You're like, okay, like what? Like, that's like, you know what I mean? Like, and yeah, there are people that are able to do that, but like, it's almost like that's the last thing you're thinking about when that's happening, you know? It's the same thing with like this stuff. It's like, you can't even sometimes think straight. You just want to run out the door, get in the car, and like drive off. It's like everything's like, it's taking everything just to get you and your child through that. Never mind like taking some notes on your phone while you're, you know.
Let me pull out like, my form here. What about you, Rachie?
You know, for me, in like the good moments, I can parent under pressure and balance my needs when it's working by habit stacking. So like, if I'm really in a struggle and I need to hide that from my daughter, I don't want to impact her in a negative way, I will get her in a bath, which is like the most incredible sensory experience for her. From birth to now 9, we've been able to utilize that skill. And if I need even more time, I can drop in some shaving cream 35 minutes in and we get another hour. You know, like I know how when I'm doing well, but really it's way grosser than that. I mean, it's like way more rough than that around here. Like, we don't often get where I can have it stack healthy choices for both of us. But even in the hardest moments, kind of, I have to have these mantras replaying. Otherwise, my suicidal ideation will take over. So I have to say that everything is temporary. And I just tell myself that. And I can prove it because I've got examples. She's been hard before. She's been in a moment like this before. She's not going to make it till next Thursday, still throwing glass. So we'll just wait it out. You know, like, we can't make it from Monday to Thursday about it. So everything's temporary. I try and avoid shame at all costs, which is like a Rachel Flanagan default. Like, it's the thing for me. It's like the grossest feeling for me, the thing that leads me down the dark path. So like, I just avoid it. Like, I just try and accept a lot. And then I have learned since going to treatment for my depression that if I'll be more successful with my own wellness if I make it a physical task. So like, I have a big fat three-ring binder. I'm talking like a Rachel Flanagan tall one. It's cute. It's real cute. It's got all the colors. It's got all the tabs. And if I can sit in front of this book that's mega and open it up and like accomplish something within this book that has to do with mindfulness and CBT and all these other like skills that help me, then I'm more likely to do it. So I just try and start small and celebrate a lot when I'm like making that time. I also will tell myself I have a survival rate of 100%. I also try and forgive my flaws. So I have acceptance of myself, but when everything's imbalanced, my hope is gone. So when that happens, I try and accept this other tool I learned called both and. And it's this theory that like, my life can be really hard and I still have worth. I'm not helping Celie fast enough, but I'm still a good mom. So I can be like, both things can be true, but it's just, they don't take each other away. So I just try and like undercut my ass attitude with some, yeah, but I'm also, so earlier today, I read you guys that in my notes, I wrote, I'm worthy even in my most shitty parts. And I say that a lot, like, I am not a burden. We are worthy of love and being okay and being safe. And we will get there because it's just, we're just flooded, overwhelmed and pent up right now. You know, like, I try and make it as small, honor that it's shit, remind myself I have skills and tell myself it's going to be over eventually.
And it's really hard. I feel like not to have that pity party too. Like,
yeah,
you know, because then that's immediately when you're like, why? Like, why is this my life? Like, why is this her life? Like, it's just, it's so hard. And guess who comes home on Friday, people?
No.
KIERRA. And only for 1 week, though.
Oh, that's so going to mess everything
up. 4 days of hell. And then 3 days later, she'll go back. So, yeah.
Okay, some of the other things that I just want to say before we tie up this episode, and we're going to do one last thing in a moment, is it's super important for me to tell the people. If you are identifying with our message, know that you're not alone. If you're identifying with my message, you should write down 988. It's a number to text. It's the suicide hotline, and I've used it. It's helpful. It's like immediate tools and someone that's right there. If you feel like you identify with that list I was telling you about of like signs of depression, but it's also consequences of life with alongside autism, know that my best understanding of like having a hard situation to it being like a time to get help is when you're struggling. I'm sorry, I got all nasally, got some tears behind the snot. When you're struggling to complete tasks of daily living, it is really not a bad mood. Yeah, like it's a bigger thing. If you're not brushing your hair and brushing your teeth and washing and taking care of your home, and it's not like, oh, I'm going to skip the dishes on Monday and Tuesday because my daughter hasn't gone to bed yet. It's like significant and getting slower. Like when life is just getting so much heavier and there's no relief, try and get help. And I said this last time, I'll say it again. It's like real cute for people to say, get help, reach out, call the people, whatever. There's no help out there in a lot of ways. And so using the 988 is instant. Telling your friends, like breaking the stigma in your close circle, allows for hard conversations to happen. And that has probably saved my life more than traditional intervention. Also, if you have a friend or you see these traits in people or a partner, it's important to know the difference between struggling and like having a plan and giving things away and being reckless. My advice is just, if you're looking to help a friend in a moment like that, is just to clear your schedule and listen without judgment. There's really no other way to help from afar, especially, than it is to just validate that someone's going, has pain in their path, and that in a few moments or hours or days or whatever, that it'll get easier. Is there anybody want to add anything else before we one last thing?
What you said, I was just going to say, check in on your friends.
Yeah.
Check in on your friends.
Yeah. I read this interesting piece today. This is my one last thing. I read an article because I was trying to figure out like what is depression and what is Rachel's problem before I come here and talk about it all. And it was so interesting. It was an article about how to help a friend. And it said to pointedly ask, are you considering suicide? I think that that's, it was really insightful, because if you were to say something like, you're not going to do anything crazy, are you? It just fuels the fact that where I'm at and what I'm dealing with is not the best choice. I'm like, I better bail out of here. So asking pointedly, are you considering suicide? Then do you have a plan and do you have means? We'll really get down to the brass tacks and maybe open the door to either helping someone or calling someone for help or just listen. Kimmy, how about you? What's one last thing?
Give yourself grace, you know?
Amen.
Give yourself grace. That's, I think, what it really comes down to, because we all beat ourselves up. We all feel guilty. It's a lot of turmoil, especially when things aren't great. And it's very natural, I think, to turn inwards. I naturally do it. I think a lot of moms naturally do it, but you know, sometimes it's just not really in our control. We just got to get through it the best way we can. And, you know, if you don't handle the situation the right way, or, you know, you're fighting with your husband over it, or like whatever it might be, like just do the best you can. It's all anyone can do.
Jane?
Just kind of what Jen said about checking in on your friends. Last year, towards the end of last year, my husband and I lost two people in our lives. One was a old friend who we hadn't talked to in a while. And that case, she, people knew that she was having mental health struggles. People were watching out for her and really concerned about her. And then my husband lost his friend. And in his case, it was more of the thing that a lot of people just didn't really notice. And it was a result of habits he had in his life that he lost his life. And the juxtaposition of those two situations is like, it can look like anything. You don't know what someone's going through, and you might think they're perfectly fine, or they're a little down, or they're doing too much and too much of this, but like they're doing okay. But really it's a much bigger issue than what you see on the surface. And so it's just like just remember to check in on all your friends and also the ones you think are happy and okay.
I was just going to say it. I was scrolling through an article, and it said sometimes it's the people that are the happiest because they're covering how depressed they are.
And it really takes, you know, a split second sometimes for that decision to be made. Just always saying a little, hey, if you're worried about someone, you know, and then also making sure they know all the resources.
Jen, do you have one last thing?
One last thing, yes. I went to the dentist today and I need two crowns. It's $5,000. I was like, I can go to Mexico and get it done and go on a vacation. Cheaper. I'm not doing that, just to be clear. But holy bananas, being an adult sucks. And I have dental coverage. That's with like partial coverage.
Oh, yeah. That's how it is terrible here in the States. Yeah. Even with coverage. Yeah. We need to uphold the whole dental system because it's a crock. Anyway. That's a whole nother mission.
I was like, Do you want my kidney while you're there? Do you do a tummy tuck? I said, are you kidding me? She was laughing. I go, I'm not choking. What else do you do for this $5,000?
When you say implant my tooth, do you
perk up my tooth?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Oh my God, that's so funny. Well, you guys, thanks for doing the series with me. I'm hopeful that we can make an impact for people. I'm excited to see the next few episodes. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Talk Like a Mother Parenting Autism podcast. If you are enjoying our podcast, make sure to rate and review us wherever you listen. And if you'd like to support us, you can become a subscriber. Just check out the description of this episode. Give us a follow on Facebook and Instagram for more content, and we'll see you next time.